You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Eric.
Hi, I'm Jason. This is the Earn and Invest Podcast.
I can slice my life into two different time periods. No, I mean it. I really can. And it all hinges on my discovering the financial independence movement. There was the time before financial independence when I spent an inordinate amount of time thinking, worrying about, and making more money. And then there was the time afterwards in which money became a supporting character, a shady figure in the background. Still important, but somehow lesser. The two sides of my life. The two sides of financial independence. I often wonder if I got it all wrong. Or maybe, just maybe, I got it exactly right. Jason is a retired scientist and biotechnology executive. After working for 23 years, he achieved his financial independence, retire early goals, and left the workplace. He now pursues a variety of interests, including travel, cooking, brewing beer, and writing on the Next Phases Now blog. Eric is a practicing residential architect, author, photographer, content creator, and founder of the 30 by 40 Design Workshop. He makes videos about architecture, designs simple modern homes, and shares his process online from the Long Studio. His target financial independence date is June 2024. Together, they're the host and creators of the Two Sides of FI podcast. Jason and Eric, welcome to Earn and Invest. Jason, let me start with you. What's the biggest misconception about the financial independence retire early movement?
I think the biggest misconception about the FIRE movement is that there's only one way to go. And that it's either, depending on your viewpoint, either it's all tech bros socking away tons and tons of money so they can retire at a very early age, or that it's only the extreme lean FIRE side where it's spend as little as possible and get out as early as you can on a very meager sort of income. And the reality, of course, is that there's a huge spectrum of people pursuing these interests. And I think Eric and I fit somewhere on that without being either of those extremes.
One reason I love your guys' podcast, Eric, is because you come at it from very different vantage points. One of you has already reached financial independence. The other of you hasn't. Let's get back to basics, though. How did you two first meet?
Oh, Jason and I met in the eighth grade. Jason actually moved to my hometown, Cooperstown, New York, upstate New York. And we met there in, you know, eighth grade. So we became fast friends and essentially spent high school together. And, you know, he was the best man in my wedding. I was the best man in his wedding. We shared a lot of life experiences, but, you know, at a certain point, we kind of went our separate ways. We even shared living in the same town for a brief space when he and his wife were living here in Maine. But, you know, then we got about as far as you could get apart from each other on opposite coasts. I'm living here in Maine. He's now living out in California. And actually, we reconnected over the sort of FIRE movement. So he's the one who introduced it to me.
Jason, tell me more about that. You guys reconnected over the FIRE movement. How did this come about? How did you discover it? And how did it lead you guys back to each other?
Yeah, that's a great question. My post-FI memory, I feel some days, is not as good as my pre-FI memory.
Mine
so
too.
Eric may need to correct me here. But, you know, as he said, we kept in touch over the years, but we lived far apart. So we would have periodic calls around the holidays or things like that. And as I recall, we were having a conversation, and I think either that was the first time I had disclosed my plans to go this route, or was among the first times I talked about it. And you know, I could just hear the light bulbs going off because Eric started asking a lot of questions. He already had this very successful business that he had started in 5 or 6 years prior at that point. And so it just became a touch point for us to discuss more often. And then eventually after I stopped working, I think about 6 months later, became the focus of this new adventure we've been on with Two Sides of Fi.
Jason, how did you actually come across the Financial Independence Retire Early movement yourself?
Like some of my age, approaching 50, came to the FIRE community and the movement rather late in the game, even though I was already on the path. You know, at my very first job, as Eric picked on me once in an episode about this, I knew I wanted to do something different, kind of right away, which is sort of a crazy notion. At first, I thought that meant I wanted to start my own business where I could have the kind of environment and culture, still having exciting science without kind of some of the drudgery that I saw in other companies. Later on, it became, you know, kind of fully formed a few years later when I met somebody, my future wife, who I'm still with today more than 20 years later, where we started to talk about wanting to live a different way and, you know, how could we retire early? And that became this pursuit of, well, if I could save in this way and build our income in this way, we could retire by 55. And so we kind of pursued that route and, you know, went doing what Eric refers to as a career leveling up strategy, trying to sort of increase my salary and kind of, you know, advance my skills while building, kind of approaching that number faster and faster. And then, you know, eventually the FIRE movement became something I was aware of rather late in the process. So it was a kind of a solo road for a while, eventually sought some outside help from financial planners along the way, and then discovered the FIRE movement. And, you know, fast forward, here we are now, a little more than 2 years after.
So, I mean, I just think it's so funny when I hear Jason talking about how he discovered the FIRE movement, and he discovered it, like, he didn't really have a terminology to describe it, but he was essentially on a FIRE path. But there was this long span of years where I feel like I was suffering through this kind of messy middle of my 30s, you know, having kids and just kind of trying to make vacations happen, just make a life. And he had this very strategic plan building up to this future early retirement date. And it was just a complete mystery to me. So when, you know, kind of rewinding back to when Jason and I sort of reconnected about it, it was a total light bulb moment for me because I thought, how could he keep this a secret from me? Like, and how could I be so foolish not to see it, like, that this was an option? I always thought, you know, when I started saving my first job, you know, they open up the retirement plan to you and say, invest 10% of your earnings in this. And it's this crazy, terrible mix of front-loaded mutual funds. You know, and it's 10% of a $24,000 salary is, you know, $2,400 a year. And I thought, no wonder why retirement is so far in the future, like 65, because it's going to take forever for this to amass to any meaningful sum. Meanwhile, Jason had this, I feel like, a strategic laser focus on reaching a certain number. And I know, Jay, that your path kind of, you know, wound like all of ours does in sort of crazy places, but it definitely felt, I felt like pretty uneducated when I learned of the FIRE movement.
Yeah. And I, to be fair, I don't want to get too much credit here. I definitely had a mission, or we had a mission, right, as a family to get to this place. But we earnestly thought it was going to be a much more modest early retirement. My wife likes to refer to it as, I'd be happy selling fish in a hut in St. Lucia. Which is true. I think she would. It's one of the things that helps me. She's so down to earth and, you know, everything we've sort of been able to achieve has been, you know, incremental. It hasn't been some sort of, you know, journey towards, you know, crazy excess. Not, you know, fat FIRE was never our goal. It turned out that my career was able to advance farther than I thought it would. And thankfully, we had that saving discipline in place and good habits and was getting sound guidance from the people I was talking to about our plans. But I can't say precisely why I wasn't more open with people about my FIRE aims, even Eric, somebody I feel like I've always been able to pretty much tell, you know, real truth to. But talking about money was always something pretty uncomfortable for me, honestly, and always felt like such a privileged goal to be able to achieve that even now, it's still a struggle talking about it.
You know, that's interesting, Eric. As Jason is talking about this, you know, he doesn't talk about money. He didn't talk about money. I imagine one of the reasons is when you start talking about things like financial independence, people think you're off your rocker. I wonder, Eric, the first time you heard this, was there a moment where you're like, oh, he's crazy, before the light bulb went off? Or did you know immediately he was onto something?
I mean, no, my first reaction, and honestly, this was my wife's first reaction too. It was like, how is this possible? I mean, I knew he was working in biotech. He was working in the Bay Area. Like, you know, we were of different means clearly. And I thought, okay, well, how much of this, you know, financial independence is related to that? And maybe the 10 steps before he leveled up into his, you know, VP level position, or how much of it is a set of systems and processes? And I think what he was gracious enough to do was just kind of share the systems that led him to being able to make the decisions. And, you know, we started off probably where a lot of people start off with, the, you know, 25 times an annual spend. That's a pretty easy thing to digest and understand. And I think once I started doing the math, I thought, and I looked at what we had accumulated to date, I was like, well, this actually may seem possible. And you know, how do we actually dig into this and do a little more research? I remember telling my wife, I'm like, oh, you know, Jason and Lori, they're retiring early. I mean, it's, can you believe it? Like, they're just a few months away from this. And she's like, no way. I mean, impossible. And so I ended up doing that, a very similar sort of education component with my wife. Just, she's a scientist. She wants data. She wants to be convinced. Show me the numbers. And I think in part, Jason and I reconnecting and, you know, creating the podcast and starting to share this information was to expose that journey from not knowing to knowing. And I don't have it figured. I don't pretend to have it all figured out. And I don't know that Jason has it all figured out. But I think for me, and I've always done this with my architecture practice as well, that journey from not knowing to knowing, that is the really interesting part. And that's the part that where all the learning is happening that can be shared out and, you know, people can take away from it what they will. And, you know, what Jason was able to give me, I want to then share out to my wife and, you know, everyone else to show that it is possible no matter what means you're working with.
Jason, we're going to talk in a moment about some of the deeper philosophical underpinnings of financial independence. But before we get there, you know, I just wanted to ask a quick question about the podcast, The Two Sides of FI. You know, I took it at face level that one of you has reached FI and one of you haven't. But as I'm listening, obviously there's more to it than that, right? I mean, you come from different economic backgrounds. It sounds like you come even from different philosophical backgrounds. Tell me why you decided to start this podcast.
That's a good question. I think, honestly, the conversation that I had with Eric where we started bouncing around the idea, and I believe the seed came from him, to be perfectly honest. And he is a very experienced YouTuber already. He has a very successful channel on his own. So maybe that made it an easy idea for him to propose. For me, initial thought was a little terrifying. Very comfortable with public speaking, given my former line of work, but not, as we've just discussed, not super comfortable talking about finances. And even in the early episodes, you can hear more trepidation than you do more recently. But initially, it became something that just sounded fun and it would be enjoyable to partner with Eric on something. I would learn some skills. It was going to be a fun way to spend time. And yeah, I am excited about this movement. But obviously, as Eric has pointed out, I was not exactly an evangelist about it. I was behind the scenes. Any interaction I had was rather anonymous on Reddit and all the other places where we are able to express ourselves a little more freely. And so it started more as just a kind of a fun concept. Now, that's very different from what it has become, where for me, it's very rewarding in terms of hours. It's definitely among one of the greatest expenditures of time. And that's completely voluntary. I enjoy it tremendously. And it's become this rewarding thing that I never would have expected. I mean, it was an aspiration that it become rewarding and fulfilling, but I could never have foreseen where it ended up. So my ideas about why to do it were rather embryonic at the time, to be perfectly honest with you.
I mean, I'll just interject here, Jay, that everything with my business, you know, I run an architecture studio, I design homes for people, but it's kind of a different practice than how most architects actually practice, where they're taking a stable of clients and you're just working client to client to client. And, you know, I found living where I live in a pretty remote place, that, you know, the clients don't come around all that often. So the business that I've developed is to sort of work with one client at a time and then take that work and just show everybody the whole design process, everything that we're doing, and just lay it all out there. And I really saw this podcast, you know, creating this podcast and taking this journey that Jason and I are both on. We're both doing it from different sides, but just laying it all out there so people could see and see the experience through each of our different lenses that we have on it. And I think you're right to point out that there's all these different ways to look at the two different sides. You know, there's emotional aspects to this, there's financial aspects to this. There's all kinds of things that are embodied in this. And really, I saw this for me, who's about hopefully two years away from my FI target, as kind of the glide path, something pulling me, some purpose pulling me into retirement. You know, like it's the next thing to do. It's like this self-publishing model. I love the idea that, you know, you can self-publish a book, you can publish a video, you can publish a podcast. All of these things are at your fingertips. And it's like this whole world of experimentation for us to try and build new skill sets. And I know, Jay, that was one of the things that really drew you to this podcast. It's like, hey, I can learn how to podcast. I can learn how to make thumbnails, all these things. And then we can also just share all of our learnings with other people. It's just, it's a great way to build community and this whole kind of pantheon of different skill sets are around it. It's just beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, Eric, I completely agree with everything you've said. I think initially it did, you know, my immediate desires were very tactical. And, you know, I just love building skills much as you do. And so that stuff did seem very attractive. But what I couldn't have known was how this idea of glide path would relate to me as well. And, you know, as I've talked about on the show before, I started writing what became The Next Phase Is Now, my blog, about 6 weeks after retiring early. And that 6 weeks was largely because I spent that time prior moving, right? Packing up a house, moving 3 hours south to a lower cost of living area in California. That does exist. And only once that was done, did it all start to hit me how big of a change I was now undergoing. And so writing, and it was initially weekly without fail for a long time, became a way for me to, while in lockdown, mind you, like all of us, process all this change, really think about it, you know, kind of throw ideas out into the void, which of course no one was responding to, particularly early on. But then what I didn't realize was going to happen was Two Sides of FI, this podcast, this YouTube channel, was going to pick up the ball and run with it even more, because it became far more interactive, first and foremost, because of my conversations with you, which we're having anyway, but now we're having them in a very different way and airing our conversations. But also because we started to get pickup, thankfully, relatively quickly. We started to build a community, got feedback from people. It was so gratifying and frankly filling a void in my life for validation, to be perfectly honest, and could never have foreseen how that allowed me to better transition to where I am now, where I feel so much more comfortable more than 2 years out than I did 1 year out, and certainly more than I did 6 months out. So I never, again, would have foreseen that being a benefit, but it's probably one of the biggest ones, along with just being able to connect with you on this and work with you closely on a project that's really important to us both.
Jason, as you speak, I'm kind of interested in this idea of how you've evolved through content creation, whether it be a blog or the Two Sides of FI, but how that's also affected your perception of what financial independence is. So talk to me a little bit about what financial independence means to you today. And is that different maybe than it was a few years ago?
That's a good question. I'm not certain how different it is, but when I start talking, I bet I'll make it clear to myself. I mean, I have always started from a very basic position, which is financial independence is the point at which you no longer require external, you know, financial input, where you no longer need other money coming in, you know, what most people call a job or some kind of paid employment that is now funding your lifestyle. You're able to meet all of your needs, to pay your expenses, to fund the fun stuff in life as well as the required, without having to have a job. You could continue to work, certainly as you have, or you could work differently, cut your hours, whatever, but it's not essential anymore. As to what it means now, I guess I suppose all of that is true, but what is different is the things that come to mind first. And the things that come to mind first are about time freedom. It's about complete flexibility, how to spend my time, what I want to focus on, de-risking sort of novel pursuits. Whereas, you know, if you're trying to cram in new and fun things while you're still working on those early morning hours, I'm a morning person, or on the weekend in between chores, it feels like a lot more burdensome and it's a lot higher risk if you pick the wrong stuff to focus on. Whereas now, although in the first 6 months, I was putting tremendous pressure on myself to pick the right stuff. Now, financial independence means how I want to spend my time, doing things on my own with my family, with friends, whatever they are. They could be as pointless or not goal driven or completely the opposite. That's okay. So for me, I suppose this concept of freedom and flexibility are probably at the very forefront of what it defines for me.
Eric, I'm interested because as I listen to Jason talk about this, I definitely see this evolution of what this means to him. You know, when you started this podcast, it was the two sides of FI. You were pre-FI, he was post-FI. But I'm wondering if you're going through the same exact evolution, regardless of your financial status.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm pretty open on the podcast in my hangups with, you know, finances and just having to earn money. I mean, right now, I'm struggling with this idea of it's easy to save. I'm finding the game of reaching FI to be pretty fun. But I worry that when I reach a certain goal, not only that, maybe I'll move the goalposts, which I think we're all guilty of doing, or I'll decide it's not enough, or I'll determine that, you know, right now, money for me is a proxy for the value that I'm creating in the world. And I fear that when that goes away, all the things that I enjoy doing, the creative practice that I do, which is making videos and making models and drawings and all of these things that feed me as a creative person, when that's no longer tied to earning some money, what's the value? Like, what's the point? And I think Jason has been teaching me and showing me, you know, by example, that there is a point to doing it and it doesn't always have to be tied to money. And it's a real journey though. And I think I'd be lying to say that I have it figured out and I feel comfortable with it because, you know, I think if you watch from day one of the podcast, when we started recording, I feel like I've grown a lot and I feel like Jay has grown a lot as well. And my relationship to money is much different. I mean, I'm putting so much focus on this. That's one of the hard parts about, you know, choosing a FI number is that you really start to get very focused on money and in a way that I wasn't used to prior to, you know, Jason and I talking, having these discussions. And, you know, there's good aspects to that, but there's also some sort of negative aspects to that. And those are things that I'm working through. And I think it's worthwhile sharing these, you know, disagreements that I have with my wife and money, and Jason and I have different perspectives on money. And I think just talking about it helps me to work through those things, but I definitely don't have it all figured out.
I like what you said there, Eric. I don't know if I'd say I'm going to challenge something, but hopefully you feel it's a very supportive statement. I have two comments that are very related. The first one is, I definitely agree that we both grow as a result of these conversations. We see the transition. You and I have had occasion to go back and listen to some of the early stuff. Makes me cringe, of course, because yes. I was not an experienced interviewee. You are, and an experienced interviewer. So I think you sort of outwardly changed less on two sides of FI. I know what you mean about under the hood. But one of the ways that you helped me evolve, there's a couple of them. The one is just, you know, speaking earnestly and being comfortable with speaking earnestly to people you don't know. And of course, we're casting this out to many people. We're still a small and early show, but you know that the channel has had more than a million views and, you know, more than 15,000 subscribers. That's a lot of people watching, listening, and thinking about our content, a portion of whom respond back to us. So there is feedback and, you know, I can see what resonates with people, what they react to, etc. So that has helped me grow just as our conversations, you and I talking, have helped me grow. But part of that is how you have helped me do some of that. And I think, and I believe that you will be able to flip that back around on yourself. And what I mean is, you know, I think of some of the earliest conversations we had when I was putting pressure on myself to, you know, figure out what the next thing was, or can I turn this activity I'm doing, you know, spending 6 months learning how to write apps, right?
Yeah.
Turn it into something. You know, you constantly guided me and I think very appropriate ways, never heavy handed. Like, hey, you know, when you open this door, you know, there's just a whole bunch more doors that leads to. And just like in your career where it has these crazy twists and turns, they work out, they lead you to things you wouldn't have foreseen. That's an okay thing. Now more than ever, it's always an okay idea, but man, post-FI, that's what you've bought for yourself. And, you know, the more you said that and the more that I got the chance to react to it and process it, I mean, it just became how I think about things now. So, I mean, you get due credit for that. I do hope in return, it means that as you start to cross that line, you'll see the types of value you've gotten from two sides of FI, which obviously is not financial value. You know, no one goes into YouTubing to become the next Mr. Beast, right? It's just not going to happen. But we do it because of all of the other rewards we get, personal and otherwise. And so in my view, you are creating content and doing all these things right now without the type of financial benefit that you seek and you get in your current career. And I hope that, and I believe that you'll be able to find all of that and more post-fund.
No, it's a good point. Yeah, I appreciate that, Jay. And I mean, once things start to build to a certain point though, don't you naturally assign, okay, well, I'm going to invest all this time. Like, might as well get something out. I don't know. It's still a struggle for me, I have to say. But, you know, starting this with no subscribers and no viewers,
yeah,
it was completely liberating because, you know, my business channel has all the pressures of having to perform at a certain level. You know, people are used to you making this kind of video. And if you don't make that kind of video and it doesn't perform, then you don't earn and you can't, you know, it just pushes everything back. It's like, so that was freeing. And I can see that kind of the door cracking open and see the kind of light pouring in. So I appreciate that.
Okay. Yeah, no worries. I get what you mean. And I was doing some of that early on too, you know, thinking about like, well, even if this isn't going to return monetary value now, shouldn't it later? And isn't that not a goal, but isn't that like an outcome that is highly desirable? Well, maybe. And it's taken me a while, and I'm not going to claim that I've fully, you know, surmounted that hill and come down the other side, but I'm way farther along in that journey than I was before.
Yeah.
We are talking to Jason, who's a retired scientist and biotechnology executive. After working for 23 years, he achieved his financial independence, retire early goals, and left the workplace. Eric is a practicing residential architect, author, photographer, content creator, and founder of 30 by 40 Design Workshop. His target financial independence date is June 2024. And we are talking the two sides of FI. We're going to take a short break. I'm Doc G, and this is the Earn and Invest podcast. You know what? I love our meals from Factor. My son started getting them about a year ago when he needed a quick alternative to meals on the go. But where we've really enjoyed them is we've been remodeling our kitchen. That's right, we've had no access to our kitchen for the last few weeks. And some nights, we just had no idea what to do for a meal. That is where Factor came in. We would just pop the meal in the microwave, and 2 minutes later, we'd have a fantastic meal. You can do the exact same thing, and there's tons of variety. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week. These are chef-prepared meals, and let me tell you, they are delicious. No fuss, no mess. You just put it in the microwave, and 2 minutes later, you have a meal. This is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Head to factormeals.com/earn50 and use your code EARN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code EARN50 at factormeals.com/earn50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. So last week, August 19th, it was a Friday. It was a magical day. That was the night we did my book launch party at the Mr. Money Mustache headquarters in Longmont, Colorado. Thanks to Carl Jensen from Mile High Fi, Pete Adeney, Mr. Money Mustache, and the wonderful crew that runs the Mr. Money Mustache headquarters. It was a magical night. We got to celebrate my book, Taking Stock. But more importantly, I've been arguing on this podcast and in my book that what's important is not necessarily our financial independence, but what that tool of money buys us. And what that is a sense of purpose, identity, and connections. And being at Mr. Money Mustache headquarters, surrounded by my community, our community, talking about my book, I just can't tell you how fantastic an experience it was. It brought to light what I'm doing this for, and what I think we're all doing this for, is to have these moments where we feel connected. It was a blast doing it. If you were not able to come to Longmont, hopefully I will see you somewhere on the road. That might be San Diego when I'm going to a Camp Fi Southwest, Or somewhere else, like I said, I might do a Chicago book launch party here too, just to celebrate since it is local. I hope to see you all in person. And most importantly, I hope you keep enjoying the show. Eric, it's interesting as I listen to your struggles about creation of value, and that can be money, that can be subscribers, that can be a way we measure ourselves. But I also think that Jason maybe struggles with the same thing when it comes to time commitments and how he's going to use that precious time he has. Talk to me about your conception of enough or enoughness. Like, have you been able through this process to start understanding what enough is? Because, you know, as I listen to you, I certainly look at my own evolution, and enough eventually became nothing about money.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how it's evolved for you.
I mean, in light of your new book, which I've just recently read, you know, the concept of enough is baked in there. And of course, I think, you know, enough really comes into focus when your family members have health issues. And my family, like many other families, have faced some very serious health issues of the recent past. And, you know, honestly, things that have continued on longer than we expected. And I think those are always moments to refocus on, you know, enough as it relates to life and time and, you know, the relationships that we have in our life, parents, friends, family. I watch, you know, my high school senior is getting ready to walk out the door to college here in 7 days, and enough you're right. It doesn't have a lot to do with money. And that's, I guess, one of the real negative aspects of focusing on FIRE so heavily is that it's easy to focus on the numbers. Those are very concrete things to point at and solve and say, well, okay, I can divide the number of months between here and June of 2024, and I can do the math and understand what I need to have in the bank before then. But I think too often those moments that you have with your kids or your parents, those tend to slip away when you are so heavily focused on those concrete things. So I can't say that I have that I've solved the enough problem, because every time, you know, my wife and I started off with a target number that was related to a certain, you know, financial goal, and we've moved that several times. And not once do I think we've actually talked about, you know, maybe what that, and more so what that enables us to do. And we are trying to do that. And Jason has been helpful in focusing this for me. You know, we have an upcoming episode that we're going to release here in another week that we talk about this topic quite a bit. And someone asked about working another year. Jason, if you could have worked another year, or 2 years, or 3 years, you know, what would that make you feel more comfortable? And the focus of our discussion had nothing to do with money. I asked Jason to recount the episodes in his life that he had over that period of 2 years that he's been, you know, post reaching his FI number. And they were all related to his daughter, his wife, the trips that he was able to take, the experiences that he built his life around. And none of them were, I wish I had more money for an RV. I wish I had X object, a boat, whatever. And so I thought that was very telling. And you know, I think more people pre-FI in my position need to hear that.
Jason, let me turn the question around a little bit. There are a lot of people who just are not going to make it to financial independence. We know this, right? The grand majority of the population doesn't. Is there such thing as enough without financial independence?
I think so, Doc G. I think maybe there's a concept of balance in there. This is a big question, and one that would be delightful to think more about, but I'm gonna take it on my feet. I think for me, you know, enough has a very clear underpinning of fulfillment, right? Of living a fulfilling and full life. And that can mean so many different things. You know, we have been focused on this concept of financial independence and all the things it enables, but, you know, particularly if you can become, you know, maybe, you know, more secure financially, such that, you know, you are able to make lifestyle changes that allow you to do all the things you want to do, and maybe some of which you're not doing presently. Maybe you could reduce your hours, or, you know, work a very different schedule, even a different line of work. I know I have people in my life who did that. They reached the point where, you know, hey, at 50, I started doing something completely different because, you know, I have enough saved that it's going to help me get to retirement, but I don't have to go in the startups or the other kind of high pressure companies where they're putting in 60 plus hour weeks, 80 hour weeks. So I think for many people, that is a concept that it's very attractive and understandably so, because you can sort of adjust the way you go about your waking hours, right? And many of us, the majority of which are spent at work in the employ of other people, to be able to make sure that the whole of your life, your existence, is focused on the things that bring you all of the types of reward, not just monetary.
I mean, I'll just say, we talk a lot about optionality. And I think I haven't reached my FI number yet, but I have a lot of optionality in my life because of the kind of business that I created for myself and you know, this kind of self-publishing model. And I think that, man, I can't tell you how much freedom and security that has bought me. And so I do, you know, to answer your question, maybe just thinking about it a little more, Jordan, it does feel like that it is achievable and attainable. It feels like when you put a plan together and put some focus on it, that there is a way to achieve this kind of life. And I like your term of balance, Jay, you know, just laying all the options on the table and then choosing amongst the ones that are going to create, you know, freedom and purpose and happiness in your life.
Eric, do we get too caught up on the numbers? I mean, do we overanalyze? That's one of the things that sometimes drives me crazy. I can have a months-long conversation with people in the financial independence movement about safe withdrawal rates, and we can pick it apart. I mean, you guys did a whole episode on Karsten Jeske's safe withdrawal rate series. I mean, there's like 20-something posts that go into as much detail as you want to. Are we missing the point?
Yeah, totally. But I'm just going to be honest, though. Like, you know, you're both post-FI, right? You have the privilege and the freedom to not have to think about it so much, right? I mean, you've done the heavy lifting, and there is that basic math that needs to be done. And I have to say, as I get closer to my FI date and, you know, a target number, I'm doing a lot more hand-wringing. So I feel like it's a place of privilege just to out dismiss it and just say, well, you know, it's too much to focus on the numbers. But to your point, we talked to Karsten, and Karsten is a wealth of knowledge, and it's all very analytical and data driven. And some of the feedback that we got on that episode was like, hey, when are you guys going to focus more on the kind of lifestyle discussions? Because at a certain point in the FIRE movement, you've done the math, you've got a plan, and a lot of it is just grinding it out and working toward that plan. Yes, there are safe withdrawal rate concerns and inflation and all these things to think about, but really, the more difficult part, and I struggle with this speaking with my wife, is, okay, well, what's next? Like, what, once you get there, we need to think about what's pulling you into retirement. You know, what is life like post-FI? What are the options that you're opening up? And my wife, to be honest, is, I mean, she's very focused on her career right now. She's very heads down as a scientist running a lab. And she said, it's enough for me just to do this. I can't, you know, sit down and come with a life purpose plan. And, you know, there's great resources in your book. And I pointed her to your book, Doc G, but she's like, I can't fit it in my head right now. It's enough just for me to do my work. And so I feel like there should be more discussion about this purpose piece, because I think if you ask Jay this very same question, he's going to tell you that there was a lot of wandering happening after reaching FI. Like, okay, totally. What is my purpose? What's my title now? We're so focused on what our title is. And I think I have a little bit of a privileged position in that when I started my business, I was able to sort of shrug off the singular title of architect. I mean, I was used to being an architect. I was used to, that was the only thing I did. But now, you know, I'm an author, I'm a content creator, I'm a photographer, like all these things. I think it just opens up this whole world of possibility. And that's what I'm trying to like talk about with my wife. And she's like, let's focus on the numbers. So I don't know. It's a struggle.
So rewinding a little bit, and there's so much merit to what you've said there. You know, one of the places I spend a lot of time these days is in a couple of different online communities, one of which is a Discord server focused on FIRE. And nearly everybody in it, as you might suspect, is in their 20s or early 30s, and they're all pre-FI. And I think there's a double-edged sword to the amount of knowledge that's available at this point. I think from a benefit standpoint, the fact that I have had exchange with 21 to 23-year-olds who are already so far along and making such smart decisions about reducing unnecessary spending, you know, saving and thinking about asset location and, you know, mega backdoor Roths, they're just so far, much farther ahead than we were and could have been at our, when Eric and I and Jordan, you got started on this path. And I know you stumbled into it as well. But the flip side of that is when I have these discussions with them about the messy middle and the overfocus on everything, and they're doing the right stuff. They're still buying as the market is going wild this year, but they're constantly talking about how the market's performing, how many years to their target it now is. And I find myself checking myself all the time when I talk to them because I don't want to appear like this curmudgeon, although it's hard to live at 49. I could be that old, but I am to them. I'm more than twice their age often. But I don't want to come across as being like that because I know their intentions and their practices are so good. But on the same note, honestly, me knowing me, the emotional mess that I am, I'm so happy that my end goal was nebulous for as long as it was, this idea of before 55. Yeah. And only in the last 5 or 6 years did it start to become a little more, you know, as the focus increased, you know, the clarity improved, and I started to chart my path there. Because it is more stressful when you start thinking about that number. What Eric's going through right now, and he's going through it in a market that's very different than it was when I started to get close to tapping out, although my last 3 months were rather rocky as the pandemic became known to all of us. That wouldn't have been great for me emotionally. So I think about people on the path now and their extreme focus on the numbers, to your point, Doc G. It does cause me some stress when I think about how I know that would affect me, and therefore I suspect it must be affecting other people that way too.
Jason, I want to make a difficult transition here. You're talking about you having much more nebulous goals and seeing these 20-something-year-olds and having them very, very on point when it comes to their financial issues, almost to the point where you're kind of, I'm sure, like, okay, guys, take it easy here. Like, you got to live a little life. You are now, you and Eric are part of that big group of content creators. You are now part of the FIRE movement. Do you think we've become a little bit over-commercialized, especially us content creators, that in some ways maybe we push that narrative too, that it's all about numbers because it makes a lot of people money and it's certainly the go-to message that's going to get you more viewers and more followers?
I think we do a reasonable job of sticking to our theme. And that is looking at this space through our eyes and our existences. And that means that we have spent a pretty high ratio, I don't know if it's 3 to 1 or what have you, on sort of lifestyle, socio-emotional versus nuts and bolts. Because in our opinion, there are people who do that really well. And some of them are such financial mutants and nerd out on this stuff who we still learn from today, Karsten just being one simple example. There are so many out there, people who are CFAs and CFPs and, you know, otherwise just very skilled. Even one of the aforementioned 21-year-olds there, so much farther along than me in that respect. I think our attempt is to not just be another voice on the pile and it be some kind of land grab to sort of draw more people into this way of thinking. We've been pretty honest from the start with ourselves, at least. I don't know how it appears to anybody else. This is intention I'm talking about, and I'll let Eric check me. Our intention is to put out what we believe to be our truth as viewed through our eyes and spoken through our mouths about why we're doing this, what we're experiencing, the struggles we've had, the successes we've had, in the hopes that it could help somebody else on their journey. I like to believe that includes, you know, little to no pandering or just, you know, following the herd. And that's not to cast judgment on anybody. Again, I think this space is so full of great content creators that I've enjoyed a lot over the years. Yes, there are a lot of voices. Yes, some are Me Toos. I can't speak to their intent, but I do agree that there's a lot out there to consume.
And people are looking for, you know, they're going to hear their own situation in your specific situation. So I think, you know, our best stuff comes from just sharing personal anecdotes and what we're experiencing right now. And there's a reality to this situation that it doesn't feel good when the market is down. And I'm just, we're going to have a conversation about that. And I feel like that's real and people want to hear that as opposed to rehashing a 3.5% withdrawal rate or some calculation. And by the same point, I mean, I don't think we're like Graham Stephan. I don't think we're like sensationalizing this whole, you know, our journey in any way. I think we are just trying to make it real and in hopes that people can relate to that. And I, you know, Jason and I come from, you know, by all comparisons, very privileged positions. So our content's not going to resonate with everybody, obviously, but I hope that there's some vulnerability in there and some recognition that we don't have it all figured out. Like even Jason, who's made it to FI and he's still wandering around and I'm wandering around too. And that's exciting to me that I can't see further than the headlights in front of me. And I hope it's exciting to other people too. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to make my FI date. It doesn't look very like June. You said June of 2024. And I said, well, it's probably December now, or, you know, I don't know when, but that keeps it interesting.
I was about to say, does it matter though?
I mean, you know, it matters in the sense that, and my wife has asked me this question too. So good on you, Jordan, for asking me this and pushing on this, because it matters in the sense that if I want to take a new client on today, so I'm getting, this is the time of year that I get all of my architecture clients, end of August, everyone's here, they're buying vacation properties, whatever. And I have to then put this in the pipeline, which is a 2 to 3 year pipeline. And it's actually even longer now, given all the supply chain issues. So it matters in that sense. So if I want to take another client on and work with them and publish content on my YouTube channel for my business, yeah, I have to make a decision now for things that are a couple of years in the future. Does it matter though, in terms of, you know, how I'm able to support the family? Probably not, because the end goal is, you know, I'm trying to create this glide path into retirement where most of my income is just going to be passive. And right now the business is like 80 to 90% passive income generated, and it's 10% to 20% client generated. So if I can squeeze that little last client piece out of there and the whole thing is passive, then no, it doesn't matter. I mean, I guess that would be the ultimate goal. So I guess I have a few more months to do that.
Jason, Eric mentioned vulnerability. And at the beginning of this conversation, we talked about the fact that when you two first started this conversation, a conversation that was incredibly private, this was something you wouldn't talk to anyone about. You've now gone public. Talk to me about friends, family, having people hear your vulnerabilities, having people hear you talk about money. What has been your experience? What has been their response?
Ooh, there's a lot in there. I think the public response has been great. And I mentioned that earlier. It's been so helpful because, to be quite honest, like many in this space, you know, you're probably not going to find a ton of support among your former colleagues and your friends who are on a more traditional path. They may be happy for you, and of course, any good friend would be, but it doesn't mean that there's not something underneath that is, you know, not as excited. And so it's not something, to be perfectly honest, I talked about with many people. It was very few, single digits within, you know, unless we're talking about within the last year. I mean, I didn't even share this with most of my family, and something I felt bad about, because there's really no reason I shouldn't have been able to be open. But on the same note, I also, you know, my siblings, my parents had different courses we took in life and different sacrifices that were made to do different things. And, you know, my income was far greater than any of theirs. And that always felt less than great, to be perfectly honest. You know, and so the fact that I was going to be able to sort of exit that much sooner just sort of reinforced that kind of feeling in me, which wasn't great. And then, you know, a lot of the typical FI stuff, and this isn't a complaint because it's a privilege to be able to do this. It's an achievement you feel good about. But on the same note, we're so fortunate to be able to have this conversation. You know, you run into the must be nice people, even among your peers, right? People who you respected, had mutual respect with in the workplace. Even other executives would hear that kind of thing. And, you know, it is a novel concept for many. You know, it just sort of feels innately like the path to do the standard thing, and anything else is weird. You're somehow quitting or, you know, whatever. And so I'll be perfectly honest and say it's been a mix. Even when I talk to people I don't know, even to this day, you know, I pour wine at a tasting room one day a week for fun. It's still, I have to kind of try to judge my audience and how I, this is what I choose, how do I tell them what I'm doing? Because sometimes they'll ask, and, you know, is this your only job? And, you know, oh, are you retired? I'm still not 100% comfortable with how to have that conversation. I still take each one case by case, but it's something I feel I've gotten better at every day. But it's, you know, it's definitely individual to each person how we handle this.
Eric, we've said multiple times on this show, it's a privilege. It's a privilege, right? To think about financial independence, to think sure. about FIRE. Can anyone achieve financial independence? Like, is it a privilege or is it something that maybe everyone could find a way to?
I mean, I think one of the reasons we're sharing our own paths here is just to prove that, I mean, Jason and I have very different paths to financial independence. Our numbers are going to be different. And, you know, we just had a guest on our show who is making $50,000 a year as a college administrator. And one of the reasons we spoke with him was because we wanted to paint the picture of what that could look like. And, you know, everyone's path to financial independence is unique and personal and different. And naturally, when the numbers are different, the life post-FI looks different. But I do feel like it's something that's completely achievable. And it's one of the reasons why we do this. I mean, I think you probably feel the same way, Jordan, that, you know, sharing this information, the part of the excitement of it is to say, this is possible for you too. And I think I'm a natural planner as an architect, and I did not have a plan for many, many years. And it's one of my biggest regrets. And it's one of the things that I'm trying to teach my children as they're leaving the nest here, is that, you know, create the plan and design the life that you want, and anything's possible. So, you know, I don't want it to be too much of a kind of a milquetoast message here, but yeah, it's definitely possible.
You know, Jordan, if I can add to that, one of the things that the conversation Eric is referencing with that individual we had the pleasure to speak with on Two Sides of FIRE recently, the $50,000 salary individual, was this idea of intentionality and purpose. And I think that resonates very well with several themes that I read in Taking Stock, your book. This idea of plan, knowing, you know, kind of thinking about what you want and how you want to live and what you want to get to and planning for that. And so some may look at that person's story and say, all right, so you're 30, making $50,000 a year, you're talking about $1 million by here, like, so what? But when you actually listen to the way that this individual's name is Steven spoke about it, the thing that struck me more than anything that I couldn't have predicted was just the sheer benefit of thinking about what you want to get to and what that might look like, so that you're taking control and charting a path. I mean, we know, we've heard the numbers, how many people find themselves in an unplanned retirement, or, you know, whether it's because they age out of a job or become disabled or something. So even if somebody doesn't have these, you know, outrageous goals of X million dollars by some, you know, very silly early age, doesn't mean that it's not within everybody's ability to take these concepts in mind and sort of chart out what they want their financial life, and more importantly, the non-financial aspects of life, to look like. And I think that's such a valuable lesson to take from all of these stories that are out there.
Well, Jason and Eric, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. I feel like there are multiple truths that exist together. One is that there are two sides of FI, right? There's pre-FI and post-FI, or not FI and post-FI. But we also know that there are many sides to financial independence. Everyone has their own unique path. All those paths are different. And yet there's also only one side, which is trying to allow our money to be of service to us so we can live a life that's meaningful. And I think that's what comes across in this conversation today, and certainly is what comes across in your podcast. I wanted to end this episode the way I end every episode, by asking you, what is up next in your life and where can we reach you? Eric, let's start with you. What is up next and how can people reach out to you if they would like to?
Yeah, I continue to publish videos on my YouTube channel. I try and do that at least once a month, doing some client projects. I have an exciting project out on an island that I'm working on. You can always find me at 30by40.com.
And Jason, what is up next in your life and how can people reach out to you?
So what's up personally is my wife and I are going to be traveling to Germany with some friends to do a little beer-themed tourism, one of our favorite things, and we're very excited about that. Yes, it coincides with the school year starting, so we will get to take that time for ourselves. And then also, I continue to blog at thenextphasesnow.com, a little less in the summer with all that happens then, but looking forward to getting back to it. And then as well, spending time on Two Sides of Phi, which is our YouTube channel and podcast.
This has been the Earn and Invest podcast. On behalf of myself, Doc G, I'd like to thank Jason and Eric from Two Sides of Phi. That's a wrap. Awesome. As you guys probably know, I usually leave the tape going just for a few minutes to catch our conversation. That was fantastic. I really enjoyed that conversation. I love having podcasters on because you guys, especially since you guys do enough episodes that's just you two without interview, you're used to kind of having these conversations in front of a mic. So it's really fun to have it feel much more like a conversation as opposed to a scripted interview.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's hard not to feel like we're cutting you off though.
Yes, I agree. I was really worried about that. We're so used to talking to each other. Your questions are so good. They prompt all these thoughts. And I was very worried that about how it felt to you because it felt good to us, but we're also so used to talking to each other that, yeah.
My take is that you should hear my voice 5% or less of the podcast.
Okay.
And the reason why people disagree on this. I've actually been criticized. Some people say, you know, I really would like you to be more interactive on parts of the conversation. But my passion as an interviewer is to find what's amazing about each person I get in front of the mic and goad them to tell me that amazing story, that amazing philosophy, to get to the basics of what they really are. And so for me, the best way to do that is to ask as good questions as I can and step back and listen.
Yeah, that's awesome. Have you taken any courses or anything to improve your interview technique? Because it's, no, I haven't read any books or anything. It's just the number of sheer number of volume of podcasts.
I love asking questions. I mean, I think that's, maybe I've done it my whole life. You certainly do it as a physician, right? As a physician,
sure.
The good physicians, like the really good ones, are like detectives. So your job is to walk in and again ask the right questions to people to get open up. I can't tell you how many times people came into my office and they'd be like, you know, they'd be like, my chest is hurting, right? And you start to asking about their chest and you start getting into it, and then you go further and, well, when's your chest hurting? And it's like, well, my chest started hurting right after I had a fight with my wife. Oh, well, tell me about the fight you're having with your wife. And then you get into these stories, right?
Yeah,
you go further and further, and you realize that the answer to people's questions isn't anything at all that you thought it would be.
Yes, absolutely.
And so I think I've been trained over many, many years to really, and I always saw myself as a physician. I saw myself as a detective. My job was to go in and ask these really kind of important questions to get people to reveal their secrets to me. And I think interviewing is the same. I listen to a lot of Terry Gross.
I was going to say,
it's a good judge.
So fresh air. I think Terry Gross is just excellent. And I mean, Oprah, right? We all grew up with Oprah at our age group. I'm 49 too. So we grew up listening to Oprah ask. And I mean, that's what Oprah did, right? She could ask one or two questions and all of a sudden she'd get quiet and these people would just, you know, come out with it. Right.
I'm a Debbie Millman fan. I'm a Design Matters podcast that's been on for, I mean, that's one of the oldest podcasts there is. But she's a great interviewer. So yeah, I love this idea about just kind of stepping back and making way. And I was going to say, one of the things that I've learned from Jason and I interacting was the early episodes, I would just cut Jason off. Like we were having just a regular conversation and you directed this very well in the beginning to say, hey, look, there is a rhythm here. Raise your hand if you want, because otherwise it's just a mess. So I appreciate it.
A smart move.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I don't know. I think these are the important conversations. Like, I think this is what we need to be doing. And I find, I was jumping out of my seat a little bit, Jason, though, Eric, as I was listening to you, because like the connection to money, I totally get it. Like, I was a huge high achiever and I was I was a high income earner. Like I actually built the business of medicine to the point where I was making a lot of money.
Right.
But I'll tell you, after some years of coming to terms with that, life is so much better not even considering money when you decide what to do with yourself.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And I've really, and it's not just money, it's actually achievement. Like I've had to let go of certain things.
Yeah.
And I've had to really start saying, okay, am I enjoying what I'm doing anymore? Because at some point I would get so hyped up on getting to the achievement that I would start doing things I didn't like, right? You start promoting your podcast in places you don't even like being, but you're doing it because you want the more followers because that's what everyone else is doing. And
Gotcha. Like, all
of a sudden, and you do the same thing with money, right? And all of a sudden you have to like look at it and be like, okay, I'm now taking that precious resource of time and filling it with stuff I don't like for some, you know, amorphous goal, which sounds great. Like it sounds great having all these followers or it sounds great having an extra million in the bank,
totally.
But might not actually get me anything.
Yeah. And I mean, I really appreciate that feedback, Jordan. And I think and I've told Jason when we started this channel that metrics are not interesting to me and they're very, it's a very negative headspace for me to get in. And I have, as my own business YouTube channel has grown over the years, I've gotten further and further away from this really aggressive content publishing schedule and just saying like, the only thing that matters is that when I'm making a video, I'm reaching out to a certain person and I'm connecting with them and I'm helping that person and I'm doing it on brand for me. Like it has to be a beautifully filmed video. It has to be cinematic. It has to be all these things that creatively fulfill me because that's the thing that I know is ultimately going to be successful in the world and not trying to tie it to finances. But man, I have to say, I go back and forth and
the temptation is real.
Yeah. And I know from reading your book that you did too.
Oh God. It's a struggle. I will say though, I've gotten better at it. Like life has been a lot more peaceful in the last year or two. And so take it from an achievement junkie over time. If you're really thoughtful about it, you can get to much more. And I use the word peaceful because it's not like I was unhappy achieving. Like,
right.
I loved achieving too, but it was a very restless, sometimes uncomfortable.
Gosh. Thing. Yeah. I can relate to that.
It's real. I mean, I honestly, that absence was really big for me. And I was definitely somebody who measured my sort of steps to achieving all the things I wanted by what was my level. I was a VP here, but now I'm a VP with a $50 million budget and a 250 person organization that, you know, and then suddenly you're not. So right. Yeah. I get being metrics driven and it was a big thing for me. And even now, because I view this as so fun fulfillment, I do look at the metrics of Two Sides of Fi. I don't tell Eric about them. I wait till he mentions them. I learned that early on. He helped me get better at that. But I still look at them because it's at least some kind of feedback, which I kind of enjoy. But yeah, it is very different than I was working and thinking about the monetary aspects of achievement and the you know, I don't know, all the other kind of empire building type things that many of us end up doing in the workplace.
Yeah. The other thing I just wanted to let you guys know is I really enjoy your podcast. I do not consume much content anymore. I really don't. That's the problem. On the creation consumption continuum, I'm now way more on the creation continuum.
Yeah.
And so my energy level for consuming is not much. But the episodes I've listened of you guys have all been really high quality. They've been really good conversations. They've been a pleasure to listen to, easy to listen to, right?
Thank you.
So that's, I think awesome. You've got something good going. Your relationship to each other carries over really well on the podcast.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. That means a lot coming from a podcaster that I listen to religiously all the time.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Thank you for putting it together. I know how much work it is. And I hope your book is doing well. And, you know, we just really thank you for allowing us the chance to speak with you here.
Yeah, absolutely. Here. My wife is just starting the book herself, so I'm excited to get her feedback. I think it'll provoke some good conversations.
Good. I hope so. The it's a weird thing, you know, just like a podcast or a blog is kind of putting yourself out there. For me, writing the book was like the next level.
Yeah.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
The corporate world is like the ocean. It's alluring, but it's also full of deadly creatures that can shred you to pieces.
It becomes kind of like a Game of Thrones political arena where everyone's trying to murder you to get your job.
My family doesn't come from corporate background, so I didn't have any sort of guidance in that.
This is not your typical work podcast.
Sometimes you need to be empathetic. And then there are times that you ask for input, but you don't really give a shit.
Listen to the Ambie Award-nominated podcast, Surfing Corporate.
Stretch opportunity. What is this, yoga class? Get out of here.